My new patrol rifle, and why did I switch? This week on Mail Call Mondays. This is John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to another Mail Call Mondays, and this Monday I'm going to talk about my new patrol rifle and why I switched from a standard AR-15 platform to the SIG Virtus that I have in front of me. Now, the Virtus is the second generation of the SIG MCX, which is similar in some aspects to a standard AR-15, but because of the gas piston system, it is significantly different in other aspects. Now, the Virtus has been out for a couple of years now. I generally am not an early adopter when it comes to duty gear, things that I'm actually going to bet my life on. So usually I will use them in training, I will work with them for a little while, and then I'll incorporate them into things that I carry at work if I find that they are reliable and I can depend on them, and I can work them intuitively. That is another very important factor. So I'm going to start by talking about my previous patrol rifle, which we have sitting right here. And it's actually kind of interesting because the last video I did on my patrol rifle, which was some time ago, actually ended up getting us a community strike and removed from YouTube for whatever reason. I have no idea. That community strike was reversed after the fact, but the video is still gone forever and ever. YouTube deleted it from their servers. Again, for whatever reason, I have no idea. So I'm going to go over this rifle real quick, front to back, and we'll talk about why I have it set up the way it is. And then we'll talk about the Virtus and why I have it set up the way it is. So this is a Rock River Arms AR-15. I put it together with a variety of different components, but it is a Rock River lower and mil-spec upper. I can't remember if it was a Rock River or Bushmaster upper. It has a Bushmaster 14.5-inch 1-in-7 twist chrome-lined barrel, so it is pretty much a M4 contract barrel on it. And underneath here, there is a permanently attached flash hider that brings it up to a legal overall 16 inches in length. That flash hider extends quite a bit into the suppressor that I have on here. The suppressor is a CTS 556. Now, CTS is now Suppressed Armament Systems. This was one of the first suppressors they made under the old company name before they turned into Suppressed Armament Systems. They used to be here in town. They are now out west. So, unfortunately, I don't have a suppressor manufacturer in town anymore. But this suppressor is a really heavy-duty, all stainless suppressor, and it has been banged up quite a bit. It's very durable, has a really nice pleasing tone to it. However, it is kind of heavy, and that's one of the reasons that it is coming out of duty, because I have much lighter, much better options now. The rail on here is a Midwest Industries rail. It is a quad rail, which I no longer really run quad rails because the Picatinny rail all the way on this right-hand side of the rifle is really not being used for anything. It's just additional weight just hanging out there for no reason at all. The reason I did go with this rail initially is because it had the cutout for the fixed front sight base. And it had rails ahead of the front sight base, which allows me to mount a Surefire light on the front of here. Now, this is kind of an interesting light setup, not one that I would really recommend, but it was a child of necessity at the time. This is a Magpul cantilevered mount on here, and then this is a Surefire Fury light. So it is just a regular handheld light that is held in a Eltor 1-inch ring mount, which I like that ring mount because it held a little bit closer than the actual Magpul ring mount, but the Magpul ring mount would work well Also, I have a little bit of rubber down in here, a little piece of inner tube, because the light would slide around a little bit in here because it has this nice slick anodized body that has like finger grooves in it, and then the slick anodized inside of the ring mount. So a little bit of inner tube in there kind of took up that gap and helped it hold on really well. The light does have a clicky tail cap on it. This is kind of my preference for this kind of setup because you can push it partially in and get momentary, but it's very easy just to press it all the way in and get constant on. So the clicky tail cap is really nice. No different modes. It is just full power on or off. So really nice setup there. And then down below, I have a BCM vertical grip. I like this because it is not overly long. It indexes my hand exactly where I need it to be able to access the light. And it just gives me a hand stop where I'm putting it every single time I grab the rifle. Drawbacks are sometimes they can get hung up on gear. Positives are if you need to work off of a barricade, you can run up and you can jam the foregrip against the barricade and stabilize the rifle. This helps if you have to do injured arm manipulations. So if all of a sudden you have a side that no longer works, then you can ram the rifle into a barricade if you need to clear jams, if you need to stabilize it to fire, that kind of stuff. So that is a nice option to have if you like running vert grips. The rail covers on here, I have just really low profile ladder rail covers. They are covering most of the unused Picatinny rail space. That keeps me from tearing up gear, it keeps me from tearing up uniforms, and it limits damage to personal property as well if you need to use somebody else's property as a barricade or as a support, which does happen from time to time. So I like to limit the damage to other people's property and limit the amount of paperwork that we have to do if that occurs. Now, obviously, if you're being shot at, survive the encounter, we worry about damage to property later. But very often, things are resolved without shooting, so we want to kind of limit that. This section here doesn't have any rail covers on it right now. That's because I did have a Wilcox Raptor Light laser on here. Obviously, I pulled that Raptor off, and I never went and covered that rail back up with rail covers. This thing I have in the middle here, this is a Condition Gray sling keeper. This works real well for keeping the sling bunched up on the forend. The reason this is important is if you have to get this rifle out quickly and go to work with it, you don't want the sling flailing around catching on things. So I can grab the rifle, chamber around, and I can actually fight with the rifle with the sling stowed on the side of the gun. I can still access all my controls. I can still hit the bolt release. I can still get to the mag release. I can still get to the selector, and I'm good to go there. But when I get to a point where I need the sling, I can just grab the sling and rip, and the sling will deploy because this is elastic and Velcro. So the elastic gives it enough give to get the sling out from underneath it. So I like this. I don't like having my sling flopping around. I've had a couple of different setups where the sling has been loose, and it always ends up catching on something. Either catches on something in the trunk, catches on something in the bag, or catches on something on my belt as I set the rifle up. So having the sling stowed, even if you just use rubber bands, is a really necessary thing. Now we come up to the top here. This is straight old school. This is an Aimpoint Comp M2. It is the 4MOA dot, and it is set in a LaRue M68 CCO mount. So it's just a single locking throw lever mount. I actually had the original LaRue mount on here that was not the locking throw lever. And I did have some instances where the lever was pulled ajar from different gear, different things on my equipment. So I consider a locking lever really mandatory on a rifle like this. Coming towards the back, I have the Daniel Defense fixed rear sight. You'll notice this rifle does have fixed co-witness sights, and with this mount, they are lower third co-witness. So my iron sights will sit in the bottom circle of the optic when I'm sighting through the optic. I went with this setup while I was still an active member on our SWAT team because the gold standard for SWAT teams are hostage rescue entries. If you have to go in to do a hostage rescue, everything has to work perfectly, and that has to be one of those where you are very quick. And the idea I had in my head, and the reason I set this up the way I did, is if I had to make an entry and it was a cross-the-room hostage shot, then that was something where I absolutely needed to make an aimed shot. It couldn't be instinctive. It would have to be an aimed shot. And if that was the day that my battery decided to fail or my optic decided to fail and I had no aiming point, I wanted to be able to instantly drop to the iron sights and fire. I trained to be able to do that. So the iron sights are set up and zeroed properly, the optic was set up properly, and everything was set up to be able to actually do that. So they weren't iron sights that were just put on the gun just to fill a policy requirement or to look like iron sights. I didn't want to have to be in a situation where I had to flip up or try to deploy sights and make sure that they're fully locked in their up position. It needed to be, okay, drop to the irons and fire. You can argue yes or no if that's a good idea or not, but that is why I did it the way I did, and it is an absolutely bomb-proof sight setup. I've never had a problem with it, and this rifle has been abused really, really well. But to be fair also, I've never had a failure of the aim point. The battery gets changed every year. On medium intensity, the battery will last several years on this optic. While I was an active member on our team, I would change it every time we would go out and do warrant roundups. Then I would switch the battery out so that I had a fresh battery in it, and that ensured that every year I was changing the battery. While we had guys with EOTechs that would show up at training and the batteries would be dead on it, I never had an instance where I deployed the aim point and had a dead battery. Obviously, that can happen. Batteries rely on chemical reactions. There are a variety of things that can affect that chemical reaction. We are dealing with an optic that requires electronics for the sighting system. Those electronics are made by human beings. They can fail. So we always need to make sure that we do have a backup for a situation like that, where you would lose your sighting system completely. But if we are talking about a regular patrol officer's rifle, then we run into, do we really need backup iron sights or not? My argument for that is your backup iron sights are generally solidly affixed to your handgun. So if you have a problem with the rifle, it's easier to sling the rifle, transition to the handgun until you get to a point where you can figure out what's going on. Very few officers train to be able to deploy iron sights and then use the iron sights while they're in a fight. Again, it's a different argument, but that's kind of the way I feel. With just a dot sight and regular either no iron sights or flip down iron sights, if I lose the dot, in most situations, I can just center the target in the circle of the dot sight and fire and get center of mass hits. So close range stuff, that's no problem. Headshots with a hostage involved, that is a problem. That's where you really don't want to just rely on centering the target up in the field of view. So that is why I'm running fixed irons on this gun. And we'll talk about that a little bit more when I talk about the setup on the Virtus. The charging handle is a Pry Gas Buster charging handle because I am running suppressed. And something else to mention on that, there is a slight modification on this handguard from what Midwest Industries usually runs. I have a hole right here that I've drilled through the top of the handguard, and that hole allows me to get down and access the adjustable gas tube that is in here. Since I have a fixed front sight, there's no way for me to adjust the gas at the gas block. So I have a restrictor type gas tube in here that allows me to run a set screw to adjust the gas setting. This is not a good setup. I have run it for quite some time. The rifle is reliable because when it fails open. It doesn't fail closed. So it just means that the rifle will fail to overgassed condition, which means I suck a lot of gas if I am running through a magazine. If I'm firing 3, 4, 5 shots, it's not a big deal. If I'm firing a 1-5 drill, then I'll get a lot of gas in the face with this setup. The detents, there are no real detents on the adjustment for the gas tube. I've tried red Loctite, a couple of different things to try to set that in place and not get it to move. It's just not a good setup. I don't believe there's enough room in there to run another set screw down on top of it to get a double locking setup. So again, that's one of the reasons why I'm transitioning away from this setup. It's been perfectly reliable through training. I've never had a failure with this gun that I didn't intentionally induce or that was ammunition related. Sometimes you shoot trash training ammo and you find all kinds of fun things. But the gas system has worked just fine on it. I just get used to getting a little gas in the face if I am doing a high volume training session. The fire control group is nothing special on here. A standard mag release, standard selector, standard trigger. It is a standard USGI trigger. I had some cool triggers in here, but there were some issues with department approval with some of the cooler stuff. Like I actually had a hyperfire trigger in here at once. But they didn't like it because they didn't have armors that were qualified to deal with the hyperfire triggers. So that came out and a standard GI trigger went back in. It's what you would expect from a GI trigger. It works 100%. It's a little gritty, a little bit heavy, but it works. It goes bang every time. The selector is a single-sided selector. There's no fancy ambies or anything here. Mainly because I don't really need it. I train to work the selector with my right-hand thumb, and I train to work the selector with my left-hand trigger finger, or if it's a precision-type shot, then I'll usually float my thumb on the left-hand side. But I'm used to working the selector on the left-hand side of the gun. The selector on the right-hand side of the gun just ends up being value-added. If I go to safe the weapon, then I'll usually pull back with both sides. So if I'm missing something with my trigger finger here, it's not a big deal. My thumb catches the selector. If there is, then my trigger finger coming back just gives a little bit of extra effort. So just the technique thing. I don't like to get myself in the habit of running ambi selectors and running it on the right-hand side because you will run into a lot of issued guns like this that don't have a selector on the right-hand side. So you don't want to be in a situation where you're trying to find a selector that isn't there. So the standard is the left-hand side selector. Every M16 that I was ever issued had a single left-hand selector, so that's kind of what I stuck with. Do have a standard Magpul Mow grip on here. Nothing special there. Again, it just works. And then here at the back, we have a standard Magpul CTR buttstock. The CTR buttstock, again, is nothing fancy. It just works. I like the fact that it doesn't have any rattle because once you get it adjusted, you squeeze the lock and it takes the tension or adds tension to it and takes the rattle out. So overall, the buttstock works just fine. I do have QD flush cups on here, and this is a Magpul, I believe this is the MS4 sling that I have on here. So I can go either from two point, like it is here, to single point. And I do have a Noveski single point QD on the back here. And again, that was a holdover from SWAT days when I was running the heavy entry vest. I like to run single point, because single point gave me the ability to switch back and forth a little bit easier when you're kind of girthed out with all the extra gear. Now, in a patrol setting, I usually am only running a two-point sling because I find the two-point sling really gives me the best of both worlds. And if I need to transition either to go hands-on or transition to handgun, then the weapon is much more controlled with a two-point sling. I can bring it down to the side out of the way and then do whatever I need to do, and the weapon will stay back there a little bit more. With all the weight on the front of this gun and a single point, when you drop it to single point mode, you end up getting cracked in the knees quite a bit. If you are not wearing a groin protector on your armor, then you end up getting cracked in the junk by things like lights and all that. And that is not a fun time at all. So that is my preference for either a sling that can convert or a two point only. So that is the old patrol rifle. Now, she is a little bit of a heavy pig because of that suppressor on the front and because the MI handguard has a lot of extra aluminum that it doesn't really need. So it wasn't really that big of a deal for me to transition in to a little bit of a heavy girl for my updated patrol rifle. So far, my biggest complaint with the Virtus is that it is heavy if you are comparing just a standard 16-inch rifle to a standard patrol rifle. Now, this is the MCX Virtus Patrol. So it has the 16-inch barrel. It does have the gas piston system in here, and so that kind of contributes a little bit to the extra weight. Now, I didn't do it any favors by adding the Surefire up here. This is the M600 dual fuel, and then on top here I have a Steiner D-Ball A-cubed, or A-3, depending upon how you want to say that, but the side of it says A-cubed. So that does add a little bit of weight up here. Now, I have a 10.5-inch handguard, so I could move all this stuff back, and then the 10.5-inch handguard would not leave as much meat out here to cast a shadow with the light, but right now, with the 15-inch handguard on here that comes factory, I have to run the light all the way up here to prevent getting a really bad shadow from the light. So that kind of dictates the way the setup is right now. My intent with this is to purchase this rifle and then SBR it, and then I will run an 11.5-inch barrel and put the suppressor back on it. But a 16-inch with the suppressor hanging out front is a little bit too much for what I want to do with the rifle right now. You notice it is in the cool stealth gray or concrete color. It depends on what you look at, what they call the color. I believe they're calling it stealth gray now. They're also available in Coyote. Apparently, they are not available in black. So that's kind of interesting. But I went with the gray because I just really kind of dig gray. I like the color. The handguard on the Virtus is a little bit chunky. It's a little bit large compared to an AR. Now, you can get a Midwest Industries handguard for this that's a little bit lighter. It steps up from the mounting point and is a little bit thinner in the fore end, and they have a wide variety of lengths that you can use. So if the size of the handguard bothers you, you can shrink it down a little bit. I have medium to large size hands, so it really doesn't bother me at all. I can drop my thumb on the Surefire pressure pad up here, and I'm good to go. Now, because of the height of the handguard, I am not running a vertical grip down here. It is an M-Lock 4N, so I very easily could put one of those BCM 4 grips on here, but doing so pulls my thumb down a little bit, and then I have quite a bit more of a reach up here to get the controls for the light. So with this grip, it's easier for me just to do a C-clamp on it and be able to get up here and activate my light. When I want to go to the laser, I can just reach forward a little bit, and I've got the fire button for the laser up here. At some point in the future, I will probably get a Surefire dual pressure pad that allows me to plug into the visible override on the laser so that I have one button that controls both devices. So right now, though, this is the way it's set up. And I have the push-button tail cap on the back of the dual fuel that gives me a backup in case something hits the wire here and breaks the pigtail for the light. That's my one complaint about these pressure pads. They are a lot more prone to failure than a clicky tail cap. So still having a clicky back here that I can turn the light on is really my preference. Obviously, a lighter weight setup would be just to go with the pigtail tail cap. But there are a lot of ways that I could shave a little bit of weight off of here if I wanted to. The gas system in the Virtus is one of the big reasons that I went to it. So we have a gas piston system here. We have a gas piston system that is designed from the factory to run suppressed. So instead of having all kinds of little fiddly adjustments, I just have a switch that I can reach in here and flick to plus or adverse setting or minus or normal setting. So there's not a lot of tuning to be done. It's just really flip one way or flip the other way. Kind of like the old 249 saws where you have an adverse setting on the gas block on those and you don't have a whole lot of other things to mess with. So I haven't had a chance to shoot this suppressed yet because I still have the factory muzzle device on here. We shot some accuracy tests on it. And the rifle actually performed really well with 69 grain gold medal match. It performed about as well with our 64 grain Winchester Ranger duty ammo as a match bolt rifle did with that same ammo. So I'm actually pretty impressed with the accuracy on the 16 inch barrel of the gun. I'm going to do one more accuracy day, and then I'm going to switch the barrel or switch the muzzle device over to a Saker muzzle device, so I can put our Silencer Co. Saker K on here, and then see how well the gas system works running suppressed. I don't anticipate having any problems with it at all. So that gas system will limit any gas coming back into the receiver area. Any gas that comes back, obviously, is not coming back from the gas system. It's blowback from the chamber and from the barrel. SIG did add a gas buster style charging handle on here, and it is an ambidextrous charging handle. So that's a really nice feature overall. The controls are pretty much exactly like AR controls. So there's nothing I have to relearn, nothing I have to retrain. I do have an ambi selector on here, but obviously the bigger knob is on the left-hand side, and it's exactly where the GI selector is and feels just like a GI selector. You've got a standard ping pong paddle style bolt release. But one interesting thing on the Virtus is you do have a ambidextrous mag release. So I've got the standard mag release button over here, and then I have the ambi release here. Now I say standard button, it's in the standard place. It is not a standard button. It is a Virtus specific piece. And you will find that a lot of the parts on the Virtus are proprietary to the Virtus. They're not pieces that you can switch back and forth. The trigger that is in here is the SIG Matchlight Duo trigger, and it's decent for a factory trigger. It's not anything stupendous for an aftermarket trigger. It's much better than the GI trigger I had in my other patrol rifle, but it is not as good as a match trigger, say a Trigger Tech or a Timney or one of those models. Now, the catch is that you can't just put a standard AR trigger in here. Some will work, some will not work. Some may end up causing breakage. I have a SIG MCX Armors course that is scheduled actually in 2 days that I will go to and hopefully get more details on what has to be done to accommodate different triggers in this system. But right now, if it's not an MCX specific trigger, you run the risk of having malfunctions or problems. So you can't just take whatever your favorite AR trigger is and slap it in here unless it's rated for the MCX. So you have that. And then the biggest thing, of course, is you do have a folding stock here. So there is a Picatinny rail on the back of the receiver. And then you have the folding stock that snaps on here. Now, it still is a collapsible stock, so you can go ahead and set your length of pull. And there is quite a few varieties of positions you can put it in, but I do find that it is shorter than a standard AR-15 collapsible stock. I noticed that when I was shooting groups and I had a magnified optic on here, I was having trouble getting a good eye relief and still getting good contact in my shoulder. So the length of pull is abbreviated versus what you would find on a normal AR in the longest position. Now for actual working, shooting from various different positions that you would find in a carbine class, there are no problems at all. I am not running it at the longest position when I'm actually using the rifle. It's just when I'm prone trying to shoot groups, a little bit of extra length of pull would have been nice. Now, if you do have a specific AR-15 grip that you really, or AR-15 stock that you really like, you can put that on there, but I'm not going to, because again, that's going to add weight, and it came with a perfectly functioning stock right from the factory. You do have QD points on the buttstock. You got QD points on the back of the handguard here and QD points on the receiver. So I can run my MagPul sling, and this happens to be an MS-1. Run the MagPul sling on the butt and on the intermediate point in the handguard. And again, this time I just have rubber bands that are keeping the sling managed while it's in a stowed position. The pistol grip is just a standard SIG pistol grip. Everything on this rifle is pretty much factory, just the way it came out of the box, with the exception of the light laser and the optic. So the pistol grip is fine. I don't really see any reason to change it out at all. It's very similar in angle and feel to the Moe pistol grip. So again, no reason whatsoever to swap that guy out. Now, you'll notice that I have a low magnification variable optic on this. This is one of the reasons that I switched at the point that I did, because we are working on a low magnification variable program at work, and so I needed a rifle that was set up the way we would want them set up. And so I am running a AR Optics, a Bushnell AR Optics 1-4. This is a first focal plane scope. It does have mil adjustments and has a BTR1 horseshoe reticle in it. You notice we do not have any iron sights on here, and that was a discussion on this because this optic will still function without any battery power. It doesn't have an illuminated reticle, but if the illuminated reticle fails, it is an etched reticle in the optic. So if you fire up your weapon light, even at night, and you have enough light to identify your target, then you're going to have enough light to see your reticle, even if you have no battery power. So at that point, having flip-up iron sights really is not a necessity. If you run into a situation where you slam this rifle hard enough to actually damage the optic, then there's going to be a really good chance that you have damaged the rifle or you have affected the point of impact on the rifle itself. And so there you would probably want to transition to your handgun. So irons are not really a necessity on this kind of setup. If the optic totally fails and we are outside of contact range where I could fire instinctively, then it's going to be transitioning to a handgun until I can fix the problem. Now, if I was carrying this out in the desert, high in the mountains, something like that, I would probably want to have flip-up iron sights on here so that if I did have an optic failure, if I fell down the hill, smashed the optic, then I could pull the optic off in the field, flip the irons up, and still actually have a sighting system that I could use. But that is the difference between having a rifle that you're going to have to do battle with for maybe a matter of seconds versus a rifle that you may have to battle with for weeks. So in the law enforcement role, an optic without backup iron sights, as long as it is a proven optic and it can function without battery power, you're probably going to be just fine. So that is why we're running it here. This is an Alamo 4-star D-Lock mount that I have on here. It is a QD mount, so you do have the little acorns here that you can spin and push in and pop the mount off. But I am treating it like a fixed mount for all intents and purposes now. So that is the overall features of the rifle. This is not meant to be a review of the Virtus. There are a ton of them out there on the web right now. I will have my own detailed review on the Virtus after I get a couple thousand rounds on it. Actually, probably more like 1,000 rounds on it. And once I come back from the armorer's course, so I have a little bit more insight into the inner workings of the rifle. But the main reason that I switched over was to get the gas piston system, because our department now authorized gas piston rifles, but not gas piston conversions. So converting this rifle over to gas piston was not an option. Originally, I wanted the 11.5-inch MCX Virtus pistol variant that comes with a folding brace, because I explained I do intend to file an ATF Form 1 and short barrel rifle this rifle. If I started out with the 11.5-inch pistol, then it would cost about $150 to add the buttstock to that rifle once the Form 1 returned, or to the pistol once the Form 1 returned and it was approved as a rifle. With this setup, it's going to cost me considerably more. It cost me about $150 to get the 10.5-inch 4-end tube, and it will cost me probably about $500 to get the 11.5-inch barrel when they actually become available again. So that is a significantly more expensive way to go to get to a short barrel rifle. So if you do want an SBR, then the 11.5-inch pistol variant of this and then adding a buttstock after you file a Form 1 would be the way to go. Now, the unfortunate thing is the 11.5-inch pistol variants of this, as of publishing this video, are unobtainable. They are very, very difficult to find. I don't know what the hangup is on SIG's end on producing them, but there are just not a lot of them out there. There are no deals to be had on them. And this, I got a really good deal on it. So I went with the gray and the 16-inch version because then I actually got a chance to see how this would work in a DMR role as well. And we'll talk about that during the full review. So in short, if you want to SBR it, wait and find a pistol variant. Don't buy the carbine variant, the 16-inch variant, and expect to put a shorter fore-end in a shorter barrel and a shorter fore-end on it, because you will be significantly more money out of pocket than going the opposite direction. So we've got a lot more work to do with this, mainly in the gym, lifting to offset some of the weight, but that's okay because those gains help in other places as well. But overall, I'm really impressed with the rifle. It works really well. It's very smooth shooting. It is not as smooth as a very well-tuned direct impingement AR. I've got a few of those that are really fast and really flat shooters. This one is factory, so I haven't put any kind of muzzle device on it to mitigate any recoil or reduce rise. But overall, I am pretty happy with this rifle. So that gives you guys a little bit of an idea of what we have on the horizon. I did want to mention that we do have some more precision rifle stuff coming. I do have an IBI carbon wrap barrel that we brought back from SHOT Show. I finally got it installed on the ultimatum deadline, and I forgot how much fun it is to shoot a 223 precision rifle. So we're going to have some more content centered around that coming up very soon to include a full review and more information on that IBI carbon wrap barrel. If you guys have any questions or comments over anything we've covered in this video, please leave it in the comment section down below or send it to us on Facebook or Twitter. If you guys like the video, please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And until next time, get out and shoot.